Hello and welcome to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Wednesday, March 3rd, 2021. I'm your reader, Catherine Moyers. The headline is County Adjust Plan to Include J&J Vaccine. Dubuque County health leaders discuss the effectiveness of the new vaccine and who will receive it, by Benjamin Fisher. With the U.S. Food and Drug Administration's emergency approval Sunday, Johnson & Johnson has begun delivering a third vaccine against COVID-19, including some to Dubuque County. Members of the Dubuque County COVID-19 Incident Management Team answered some key questions about what this new vaccine's arrival means for the overall vaccination effort. Absolutely. Once we start seeing an increase in the allotments of all the vaccines, said Mary Rose Corrigan, public health specialist for the City of Dubuque. But of the 25,600 Johnson & Johnson doses the Iowa Department of Public Health received in its first shipment, just 200 of those are going to Dubuque County. The county was one of 17 in the state to get a piece of that allotment. Essential workers in food, agriculture, and manufacturing plants who live or work in areas where social distancing is difficult or impossible are prioritized in the current tier identified by the IDPH. Corrigan said other than the IDPH keeping Johnson & Johnson separate from the county's weekly allotment of 2,350 doses, the total dose impact is unclear. Quote, back at the end of January, they said, the allotment you get the first week of February is what you're going to get all of February, she said. That was great for planning. They're not saying that yet with Johnson & Johnson, unquote. Corrigan said one thing the Johnson & Johnson vaccine specifically offers is versatility. In addition to being a one-dose vaccine, it can be stored at a much higher temperature. Quote, the storage is very nice, not having to do the ultra-cold or sub-zeros, said Stacy Killian, administrator of the Visiting Nurse Association. It helps out with who we can allocate the vaccine to, Corrigan added. The fewer transfers we have to deal with, track, and do the paperwork for, the better, unquote. It could also eventually mean administering the Johnson & Johnson vaccine on-site at new places, whether that is the floor of a major employer's facility or to a rural, remote location, as in the county's plan, once more people qualify to receive the vaccine. The IDPH has said that the first Johnson & Johnson shipment is for those identified as essential workers in this current tier of Phase 1B group of qualified recipients. Corrigan said that is a good move. Quote, because of logistical considerations dealing with workforce, one vaccine versus two, that makes it a lot easier to plan for work sites, she said. Some of the other priority populations have the ability to get two vaccines a little easier. They can go to clinics twice without disrupting their work or their general life as much, unquote. So the Johnson & Johnson vaccine is a good option, as the county has been directed to administer vaccines to both those workers as well as people 65 and older and those living at home. Corrigan said the 200 doses for essential workers are going to be directed to two of the smaller plants in the county. Appointments are already being scheduled. Residents 65 and older should still expect a call from their regular health care provider. Those without a provider can call the VNA's hotline at 563-587-4950. Studies to date have shown that the Johnson & Johnson vaccine to be 100% effective at keeping people from being hospitalized or dying from COVID-19. It has also prevented people from getting the disease at all 85% of the time. This is slightly lower than the 95% for Pfizer and the 94% for Moderna. Corrigan said people's frame of reference might need adjusting there. Quote, with Pfizer and Moderna, kudos to them, the bar was set really high. But the only other vaccine that might come close to that is for measles, she said. The J&J at 85% is really a top-notch efficacy also, unquote. Corrigan said the influenza vaccine every year is between 60 to 70% effective at blocking the disease, but does block most serious illness and death. Killian said her team recommends any of the three vaccines. Corrigan said that just because there is a third vaccine does not mean people will be able to choose one over the other. Quote, "We won't be able to accommodate that," she said. "You get what you get, and you don't mind a bit," unquote. Killian explained that is especially true now that the county must administer doses very quickly. Quote, "We have a very, very short time frame to administer the vaccine once it's allotted to the county," she said. "There's not a lot of wiggle room," unquote. The IDPH has instituted a rule that 80% of a county's allocated doses must be administered by the end of the week they are received, or the next week's allocation will be reduced. Quote, "If a person really has a personal feeling about that, they can decline and then seek the vaccine elsewhere at one of the retail sites, which are very limited right now," unquote, Corrigan said. And she continued, "We couldn't agree. We couldn't guarantee or help them with that, but they're free to do that," unquote. The next story is Farber wins Ward 1 seat in Dubuque. Business owner narrowly defeats her opponent, John Pregler, in a race for city council position. By John Cruz. A Dubuque business owner narrowly won the city council Ward 1 seat in a special election Tuesday. Susan Farber garnered 702 votes, or 51.1% of those cast, to top John Pregler, who received 670 votes, or 48.8% of those cast, according to unofficial results from Dubuque County. One write-in vote was also cast. Quote, "I feel very privileged," Farber told the Telegraph Herald after the results were tabulated Tuesday night. "I'm excited and I'm very pleased with all of the support," unquote. Voter turnout was about 12% of the more than 11,000 registered voters in the ward. The ward covers much of the southern and western half of Dubuque. Farber will succeed Council member Kevin Lynch, who was appointed to the seat last summer following Brett Shaw's resignation when he moved away from Dubuque. A citizen's petition calling for a special election was filed in August. Farber and Pregler easily outpaced a third candidate, Nicole Weber, in the February 2nd primary election, putting them on the ballot Tuesday. Farber said she was appreciative of the support she received throughout her campaign and looks forward to working with the City Council on shaping the budget for fiscal year 2022, which starts July 1st. Council members will hold a series of budget hearings kicking off that process this week. The seat will be on the ballot again in November's election. Farber said she plans on figuring out how to balance learning her new role as a council member while also preparing for re-election. Quote, "I can multitask, and I'm sure we will come up with the best solution for working on the council and campaigning," unquote, she said. Farber, who owns Magoo's Pizza in Dubuque, touted her business experience as a potential source of valuable insight for the council throughout her campaign. She previously held multiple executive roles for global telecommunications corporations. Meanwhile, Tuesday marked the second close loss for Pregler in running for the Ward 1 seat. He lost to Shaw in 2017 by about 90 votes. Pregler, who is Vice President of Asset Management Solutions at Data Transfer Solutions, LLC, ran on a campaign promoting a reduction in city spending while also advocating for increased support of Ward 1 residents and those on fixed incomes. Pregler said he was pleased with the voter turnout in the special election and congratulated Farber on her victory. He said it is unlikely he would run again for the seat in November, but added that he might seek an elected city position in the future. Quote, "If I run in November, it will not be for Ward 1," Pregler said. "It will most likely be for mayor," unquote. Now, setting her sights on assuming office, Farber said she intends to work with city council members in examining the city's various departments to look at the potential of optimization. She added that she will remain committed to rejuvenating the local economy as it comes out of the COVID-19 pandemic. Quote, "I think one thing about Dubuquers is that we are resilient, and we will get through this," Farber said. "We can get back to a more robust economy." Unquote. The last story from the front page is Couple Amasses Trove of Antiques. Mount Hope residents have spent decades building their collection of farm equipment, machines, tractors, and toys by Bennett Goldstein. Mount Hope, Wisconsin is the dateline. Collecting antiques reminds Bob and Sharon Wood of their childhoods when many families, including their own, lacked possessions. Now their homestead is filled with them, a byproduct of decades of attending auctions, flea markets, and garage sales. Quote, "This is what you do when you get old," unquote, said Sharon, 74. Or older, she said. Tools and machines hang from the walls and crowd the floor space of three steel sheds, scythes from an era when laborers cut grain stalks by hand, to oxbows when plows were pulled by draft animals, to the first modern diesel tractors. Their latest acquisitions have caused a stir among antiquarians in Ohio. Poking online, Bob, 78, located a 19th-century hay rack and antique reaper retailing at an estate sale. He purchased both for $1,000 last March. Hay rakes from the period lifted and deposited cut grasses into rows where they could dry before they were baled or rolled. The Woods' reaper is comprised of a metal slide, the front of which is attached to a toothed sickle that oscillated while horses pulled it across fields. As it cut, a set of spinning reels, onto which tines were attached, pitched the hay into rows, which farmers later bundled by hand. The Woods, both retired farmers, decided to learn about their machine's history, but the technology that drives the implements fell out of use long ago, leaving few alive with knowledge of how to operate them. They reached out to staff at Farm Collector and Antique Power magazines. Among the responses they received was an inquiry from the executive director of the Springfield, Ohio Historical Society, who expressed an interest in displaying the devices at a local museum. Quote, "We're thrilled," said Dan Herlihy. "I've been looking for one of these units for about 15 years, unquote. The Reaper, a precursor to the modern combine, was manufactured by Champion, a Springfield company later purchased by a predecessor to International Harvester Company. The Rake, meanwhile, was manufactured by Chambers, Bering, and Quinlan Company of Decatur, Illinois. Several months later, Bob decided to donate the machines to the museum, and they will be shipped this spring. Quote, "Other people will get to see them," Bob said. "It makes me feel good." Unquote. The two editions represent just an iota of Bob's relics. He started collecting the Winchester rifles and tools more than 25 years ago, before transitioning to tractors of all scales. 17 full-size models are wedged like puzzle pieces in the storage sheds. The oldest, a shiny emerald John Deere, dates to 1939. Bob loans the still operational vehicles out for tractor rides and parades. Tucked into a corner behind the two trailer loads of toy pedal tractors and cars is a wooden circus wagon the Woods discovered at an auction. Last year, Sharon intended to place Bob inside and haul him through town using a tractor during the Mount Hope Dairy Days parade, which organizers ultimately canceled. COVID saved him, she said. In their basement, Bob has lined wall-mounted shelves with at least 100 collectible farm toys. Some are stacked waist high on the floor. He does not know why he enjoys acquiring them. Quote, "He was always a John Deere man, let's put it that way," unquote, Sharon said. The Woods also have amassed an assortment of other antiques, a pump-action vacuum cleaner, and chaps, and a lasso belonging to Billy Bushbaum, a famous rodeo sportsman. Photographs of their four smiling grandchildren rest on the bookcases and an antique secretary in their office. Nearby, a stuffed 500-pound black bear stands atop a pile of stones. Bob shot it at Clam Lake in northern Wisconsin, where the family owns a share of Dogtown Camp. For 9 years, owners have hosted with youth, critical illnesses, or disabilities for an annual bear hunt, a happening organized by the United States Sportsman Alliance. Every one of those kids shot their own bear, Sharon said. It's just phenomenal. You just cry, unquote. The woods had few belongings growing up in Mount Hope, but Sharon said that was the case with many Southwest Wisconsin families at the time. Quote, we didn't know what we didn't have, she said. You appreciate things more, unquote. Sharon and Bob lived down the road from one another, but it was not until she was in high school that they started dating. Quote, I tell everybody that when I started farming, I needed somebody to cook and wash for me, Bob said jovially. So I took the first thing that came along and she come with her own pots and pans, unquote. They recently celebrated their 55th wedding anniversary. Sharon chuckled. Always stories, she said. They raised a son and a daughter, both of whom worked on the farm, even during college. Their children's latest chore will involve determining how to deal with their parents' antique collection, especially the toys. Quote, I guess we will leave for them, for the kids, and have it be their headache, unquote, Bob said, laughing. Turning to page 2 and the COVID report. 3 additional COVID-19 related deaths in 24 hours. Each day, the Telegraph Herald is recapping changes in local COVID-19 testing and recovery. Tuesday's developments included. 3 new deaths were reported in the Telegraph Herald's 10-county coverage area between 5 p.m. Monday and 5 p.m. Tuesday. 1 new death was reported in Clayton County, raising the county's death toll to 54. 1 additional death was reported in Delaware County, increasing the county's death toll to 40. 1 new death was reported in Grant County. The county's death toll increased to 81. In Iowa, as of 5 p.m. Tuesday, Dubuque County had a 14-day positivity rate of 3.8%, while Clayton County was at 1.5%, Delaware County 1.1%, Jackson County 2.8%, and Jones County 1.9%. Iowa did not provide new county-level hospitalization data Tuesday. The figures as of Sunday afternoon showed that 13 Dubuque County residents with COVID-19 were hospitalized. Also hospitalized was 1 Jones County resident. No such residents of Clayton, Delaware, or Jackson counties were hospitalized as of Sunday. As of 5 p.m. Monday, no local long-term care facilities were on the state's outbreak list. Statewide, Iowa reported 407 additional COVID-19 cases for a total of 337,062. The state reported 26 additional related deaths, so the toll rose to 5,498. As of 5 p.m. Tuesday statewide, 349,744 residents had received one dose of COVID-19 vaccine, and 186,759 were fully vaccinated. A free COVID-19 testing site will open in Platteville on Friday, March 5th, 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the National Guard Armory, 475 North Water Street. Appointments are not required, but visitors are encouraged to pre-register at register.covidconnect.wi.gov. Wisconsin reported 324 additional statewide cases as of 5 p.m. Tuesday, raising the state's total to 564,592. There were 28 additional deaths reported, raising the toll to 6,440. Wisconsin also reported 928,958 residents had received at least one dose of vaccine, 16% of the state's population. Statewide, Illinois reported an additional 1,577 cases, increasing the total to 1,189,416. The state reported 47 additional related deaths, increasing the toll to 20,583. Illinois also reported 1,085,628 residents had received the first dose of the vaccine, and 866,132 were fully vaccinated. As of 5 p.m. Tuesday, 55,296 residents in the Telegraph Herald's 10-county coverage area have had at least one dose of the COVID-19 vaccine, 18.3% of the area's population. Here are the area COVID-19 cases as of Tuesday by county. In Iowa, Clayton County has 1,597 confirmed cases. There have been 54 deaths. 1,521 have recovered, and there are still 22 active cases. In Delaware County, there have been 1,852 confirmed cases. That's up 2. There have been 40 deaths. That's up 1. Recovered are 1,766, and active cases are 46, and that's down 13. In Dubuque County, there are 12,387 confirmed cases. That's up 6. There are deaths of 194. Recovered are 11,705, and active cases of 488. In Jackson County, there are 2,096 confirmed cases, 38 deaths, 1,975 recovered, and 83 active cases. In Jones, there are 2,847 confirmed cases. There are 54 deaths. Recovered are 2,742, and active cases are 51. In Illinois, in Joe Davies County, confirmed cases are 1,606, deaths 24, recovered 1,558, active 24. In Wisconsin, in Crawford County, confirmed cases are 1,694, deaths are 17, recovered are 1,664, and active are 13. In Grant County, 4,678 confirmed cases, 81 deaths, 4,542 recovered, and 55 active. In Iowa County, 1,860 confirmed cases, 9 deaths, recovered are 1,826, and active cases are 25. And finally, in Lafayette County, 1,463 confirmed cases, 7 deaths, recovered 1,439, and active cases are 17. We now have COVID-19 vaccination data, also by county. In Iowa, Clayton County, at least one dose is 3,375, that's up 46. Percent of county is 19.2% of the county. Completed is 874, and percent of the county is 4.9%. In Delaware County, at least one dose has been given to 2,591 people. That's 15.2% of the county. Completed are 962 people, and that is 5.6% of the county. In Dubuque County, 18,258 people have received at least one dose. That is 18.7% of the county. Completed are 7,941 people, and that is 8.1% of the county. In Jackson County, 3,524 people have received at least one dose. That is 18.1% of the county. Completed are 908 people, and that is 4.6% of the county. In Jones County, 3,448 people have at least one dose. That is 16.6% of the county. Completed are 1,210 people, and that is 5.8% of the county. In Illinois, Joe Davies County, at least one dose has been given to 2,964 people. That is 13.8% of the county. 1,281 people have completed their doses, and that is 5.9% of the county. In Wisconsin, Crawford County, 2,838 people have received at least one dose. That is 17.6% of the county. 1,191 people have completed their doses, and that is 7.4% of the county. In Grant County, 9,668 people have received at least one dose. That's 18.8% of the county. 6,445 people have completed, and that is 12.5% of the county. In Iowa County, 5,271 people have received at least one dose, and that is 22.3% of the county. 2,884 people have completed both doses, and that is 12.2% of the county. And finally, in Lafayette County, 3,359 people have received at least one dose, and that represents 20.2% of the county. Completed are 2,121 people, and that represents 12.7% of the county. And that's it for the COVID news today. The next article on page 2 is funding approved for Jackson County Jail and West Delaware Schools. Local Iowa voters headed to the polls Tuesday for multiple special elections. Among the notable results, millions of dollars of funding was approved for a new Jackson County jail and improvements in the West Delaware County Community School District. In the Jackson County Jail election, the third time was the charm for a measure to build a new Jackson County jail. County residents approved up to $5.9 million in bonds for a new facility, which will be built near the intersection of Jacobson Drive and East Maple Street in Maquoketa. There were 2,273 votes in favor, or 71.3%, compared to 914 votes against it. The measure required support from at least 60% of voters to pass. County residents with a home valued at $100,000 will see a property tax increase of about $17.42 per year on the county portion of their bill related to the jail. Constructed in 1972, the existing jail has been cited by the Iowa Department of Corrections for having numerous deficiencies and safety risks. Tuesday marked the third time that county supervisors have taken funding for a new jail to voters. More than 50% of voters backed the effort in each of the previous two elections, but both fell short of the 60% threshold. West Delaware County Community School District. Voters in the West Delaware County Community School District approved a $20 million bond issue to remodel, repair, and improve the elementary, middle, and high schools. A total of 752 voters, or 67.6% of those who cast ballots, supported the measure, while 361 voted against it. The measure required support from at least 60% of voters to pass. The funds will be used to provide air conditioning in all buildings, improve ventilation, replace piping, and improve energy efficiency. District officials also plan to remodel secure entrances and improve the parent and bus drop-off lane at the elementary and middle schools. Officials have estimated that the related median increase on the school district portion of the property tax bills would be about $54 annually per household based on an average assessed home value in the city of Manchester of $135,000. Western Dubuque Community School District. Voters overwhelmingly approved a 10-year renewal of Western Dubuque Community School District's physical plant and equipment levy. A total of 625, or 80% of residents, voted for it, while 157, or 20%, were against it. The measure required a simple majority to pass. The levy will remain at its current rate of $1 per $1,000 of taxable valuation. It has been in place since 2012 and generated more than $1.5 million in the 2019-2020 school year. District officials said the PPEL funds are used to maintain the bus fleet, purchase laptops for student use, and support projects such as roof repairs, security cameras, and boiler replacements at district facilities. Andrew Community School District. Voters narrowly approved reinstating Andrew Community School District's physical plant and equipment levy. A total of 133 people, or 53%, voted for it, while 117, or 47%, were against it. The measure required a simple majority to pass. The previous PPEL, or PEPL, expired 5 years ago. Since then, district officials have had to deal with larger facility needs that have depleted available funds. Officials set the PEPL rate at $1.34 per $1,000 of taxable valuation, which will generate about $168,000 per year. The funds will be used to replace plumbing, replace roofs, and fix issues with heating controls. District officials previously said they plan to decrease the levy rate for their management fund if the PEPL levy was approved, an action that would result in residents' overall school tax rates remaining the same. And finally, Bellevue Community School District. Voters approved the reauthorization of Bellevue Community School District's current revenue purpose statement for funds it receives from the state's 1 cent sales tax for school infrastructure. A total of 575 people, or 65% of voters, approved the reauthorization, while 308, or 35%, voted against it. The measure required a simple majority to pass. The measure doesn't raise or lower taxes, but merely addresses how these funds will be used. District officials have said they will continue using this revenue stream for building projects, technology, and equipment purchases, and providing funds for property tax relief. Iowa lawmakers in 2019 set a January 1, 2031 sunset date on districts' current revenue purpose statements and mandated that voters must authorize districts' plans for how they will spend their funds beyond that. Voter support for the reauthorization means that the Bellevue revenue purpose statement will be extended until the sales tax expires in 2051. You are listening to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Wednesday, March 3rd, 2021. On IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now we'll turn to today's obituaries. Deanne Lloyd, Mason City, Iowa. Rhonda Deanne Grant Lloyd, 60, tragically passed away Monday, February 22, 2021, in her Mason City home. A memorial service will be held at 2 p.m. Saturday, March 6, 2021, at Hogan Bremer Moore Colonial Chapel, 126 3rd Street Northeast, Mason City. A celebration of her life will follow at the Willow Run Lounge, 2781 4th Street Southwest, Mason City. Visitation will be noon to 2 p.m. on Saturday, March 6, 2021, at Hogan Bremer Moore Colonial Chapel, 126 3rd Street Northeast, Mason City. Lois J. Temperley, Hazel Green, Wisconsin. Lois J. Temperley, 78, of Hazel Green, Wisconsin, died Monday, March 1, 2021, at Stonehill Franciscan Services, Dubuque, Iowa, of cancer. A private funeral service will be held at 10:30 a.m. Thursday, March 4, 2021, at Stonehill Franciscan Services, Dubuque, Iowa, with Reverend Ken Frisch officiating. Services will be live-streamed through Facebook on the funeral homepage. Burial will take place at a later date. Casey McNett Funeral Home and Cremation Services of Cuba City is assisting the family. Mary Ann Kiefer, Galena, Illinois. Mary Ann Kiefer, 76, of Galena, passed away on Sunday, February 28, 2021, at Galena Strauss Senior Care Community. Due to COVID-19 restrictions, a private family mass will be held at St. Mary's Catholic Church, Galena. Burial will be in the church cemetery. Cremation rites have been accorded. The Furlong Funeral Chapel, Galena, is assisting the family. Darlene M. Consett. Darlene M. Consett, 82, of Dubuque, died on Monday, March 1, 2021. Visitation will be held from 3 to 7 p.m. Friday, March 5th, at Engelhoff, Siegert, and Casper Funeral Home and Crematory, 2659 John F. Kennedy Road. A mass of Christian burial will be held at 10:30 a.m. Saturday, March 6th, at Church of the Nativity in Dubuque. Interment will be in Mount Calvary Cemetery. Earl R. Breimeyer, Holy Cross, Iowa. Earl R. Breimeyer, 82, of Holy Cross, died on Monday, March 1, 2021. Visitation will be held from 3 to 7 p.m. Thursday, March 4th, at Kramer Funeral Home in Holy Cross. A mass of Christian burial will be held at 11 a.m. Friday, March 5th, at Immaculate Conception Catholic Church in North Buena Vista, with burial in the church cemetery. David A. Nice, Cuba City, Wisconsin. David A. Nice, 72, of Cuba City, died Tuesday, March 2, 2021. Visitation will be held from 9 to 10:45 a.m. Saturday, March 6th, at Holy Ghost Catholic Church, Dickeyville, Wisconsin. Mass of Christian burial will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday at the church. Burial will be in the church cemetery. Casey McNett Funeral Home and Cremation Services of Cuba City is assisting the family. Gail E. Curry, Bellevue, Iowa. Gail E. Curry, 64, of Bellevue, died on Sunday, February 28, 2021. Visitation will be held from 4 to 6 p.m. Thursday, March 4th, at Carson Celebration of Life Center in Maquoketa. A private celebration of life will be held with burial in Pence Cemetery in Baldwin. Ernest L. Blankenship. Ernest L. Blankenship, 69, of Dubuque, died on Saturday, February 27, 2021. Private family services were held. Burial will be in Linwood Cemetery in Dubuque. Bear Funeral Home of Dubuque is assisting the family. Judith M. Ellery, Sherrill, Iowa. Judith M. Ellery, 77, of Sherrill, died on Monday, March 1, 2021. Visitation will be held from 10 a.m. to noon, Saturday, March 6th, at First Congregational United Church of Christ in Dubuque. Services will be held at noon, Saturday, at the church. Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory of Dubuque is assisting the family. James B. Bow. James B. Bow, 76, of Dubuque, died on Monday, March 1st, 2021. Visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. Friday, March 5th, at Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, 2595 Rockdale Road. A mass of Christian burial will be held at 10:30 a.m. Saturday, March 6th, at St. Joseph Key West Church in Dubuque. Alan A. Strang, Cascade, Iowa. Alan A. Strang, 91, of Cascade, died Tuesday, March 2, 2021. Visitation will be held from 8 to 10 a.m. Friday, March 5th, at Rife Funeral Home, Cascade. Mass of Christian burial will be held at 10:30 a.m. Friday, St. Martin's Catholic Church, Cascade. Burial will be in Mount Olivet Cemetery, Key West, Iowa. Funeral services. Rosalie Glanz, Dubuque. Visitation, 10:30 to 10:45 a.m. Thursday, March 4th, Mother House Chapel at Mount Carmel, Dubuque. Mass of Christian burial, 10:45 a.m. Thursday at the chapel. Carrie J. Keener, Lawana, Iowa. Visitation, 3 to 8 p.m. Friday, March 5th, Leonard Grau Funeral Home, Monona, Iowa. Loris N. LaConte, Dubuque. Visitation, 10 to 11 a.m. Friday, March 5th, St. Joseph Key West Catholic Church, Dubuque. Mass of Christian burial, 11 a.m. Friday at the church. Mike J. Martinson, Monticello, Iowa. Visitation, 4 to 7 p.m. Thursday, March 4th, Rife Funeral Home, Cascade, Iowa. Walter E. Neal, St. Catherine, Iowa. Visitation, 9:30 to 10:30 a.m. today, St. Catherine Catholic Church. Mass of Christian Burial, 10:30 a.m. today at the church. Terence J. Tigas, Sherrill, Iowa. Graveside services, 11 a.m. Saturday, March 6th, Linwood Cemetery, Dubuque. Now we turn to the sports page, and Rams on Cloud 9 is the story for boys prep basketball. Dubuque Senior 62, North Scott 40 in the Iowa Class 4A Substate Final by Steve Ortman. The dateline is Clinton, Iowa. Dubuque Senior never counted itself out. Now the Rams can count themselves in for their eighth trip to the Iowa State Boys Basketball Tournament. Red Hot Senior led wire to wire in a 62-40 rout of North Scott on Tuesday night in the Class 4A Substate 5 championship game at Clinton High School. Jim Boniface scored 13 points. Max Lynx had 12, Kane McWilliams 11, and Tyler Schuster added 10, as nine players scored in a balanced effort that powered the Rams to their ninth straight win. Quote, "We don't give up," said Link, who scored all his points on 4 3-pointers. "We had a rough start coming out of the preseason. We had good team chemistry. We just needed to put it all together. Now we're undefeated through February, and we need to keep that going through March." Unquote. Sitting with a 3-8 record just more than a month ago, the Rams, now 12-8, have completed a remarkable turnaround in qualifying for the state tournament next week at Wells Fargo Arena in Des Moines. They drew the number 8 seed and will face top-seeded Cedar Falls in the quarterfinals at noon a week from today. Quote, "We're playing great basketball," senior coach Wendell Eimer said. "We went undefeated in February, and now we want to go undefeated in March. The kids really came out and played well on both ends of the floor." Unquote. Led by a group of 9 seniors that includes Boniface, Link, McWilliams, Schuster, and Kendrick Watkins-Hogue, the Rams have flipped the script on their season and rallied together to pull off what many thought would be impossible after such a flat start. Quote, "It came down to the seniors," Schuster said. "We had great leadership, and we knew how we started is not how we usually play basketball. We started pulling in a lot of time, and now it's finally coming together." Unquote. Link swished a 3 to open the scoring and began a hot run for the Rams to build a lead. Watkins-Hogue added a tray, and Schuster made a pair of free throws for a quick 8-0 start. Then Boniface scored inside to extend the lead to 11-3. The Rams led 13-3 to close the first quarter by holding the Lancers to a 1-for-10 shooting from the field over the first 8 minutes. Quote, "We just keep going," Link said. "Coach tells us that all the time, so we just keep going. We have to come out strong to win games, and that's what we did." Unquote. Watkins-Hogue's steal and layup gave the Rams their biggest lead of the half, 15-3, to open the second quarter, but North Scott finally got cooking from beyond the arc to make it a game by halftime. The Lancers went on to a 16-11 run over the period, sparked by 4 made triples to draw within 20-17. Boniface scored 6 points in the quarter to hold seniors' lead at 24-19 the break. Quote, "We made a couple of adjustments defensively in the second half that really worked," Eimer said. "It helps when you're knocking down the shots. These guys really came to play and put it away in the second half." Unquote. Senior busted the game open with a 20-8 run during the third quarter. McWilliams began a 10-point quarter for himself with a coast-to-coast layup. Then Boniface muscled his way in for a deuce. McWilliams hit free throws and then drilled back-to-back 3-pointers as the Rams used a 14-2 spurt to open the quarter for a 38-21 lead at the 3:42 mark. Sam Atkins joined the fun by dropping a tray. Then Link added another in the closing seconds as the Rams stretched the lead out to 44-27 at the end of the third, and the Lancers struggled to keep pace. Quote, "It's just really coming together," Schuster said. "You can see the energy we're playing with right now, and we were able to pull away in the third quarter. We are playing with a lot of confidence." Unquote. Link added 2 more trays in the fourth quarter as the lead hovered around 20 most of the final period. With another trip to Des Moines on tap next week, The Rams feel like they are hitting their stride at the perfect time. Quote, I love my seniors, Eimer said. They are an outstanding group of kids. They impressed me with being such good leaders. We are just playing great basketball right now. They know how to play senior basketball. And now we get to keep playing. Unquote. In girls prep basketball, Glenwood 79, Wallert 57. Iowa Class 4A State Quarterfinals, number one, Glenwood ends Wallert's remarkable run in state. In the state quarters. By Danny Miller. Dateline is Des Moines. They did not look timid or play with any sense of doubt whatsoever. In fact, quite the opposite. But by now, was anything different expected from this resilient group? In the end, however, Dubuque Wallert bowed out of the Iowa Class 4A Girls State Basketball Tournament with a 79-57 defeat to top-seeded Glenwood on Tuesday afternoon at Wells Fargo Arena. It was the Eagles' first state tournament appearance since the 2013 season. Quote, it's been a great journey, Wallert coach Chris Spiegler said. We were so competitive all year with the 5A schools and just so close in so many games that our record could have looked even better. But to knock off Cedar Rapids Xavier and Waverly Shell Rock in regional play to make it here is just remarkable. Unquote. For much of the first half, it was not clear which team was the favorite and which was the underdog, as Wallert matched Glenwood's physicality and intensity. The Golden Eagles drove toward the post fearlessly and kept pace with the Rams' up-tempo transition offense. Emma Donovan gave Wallert an advantage right off the bat as she took the game's opening tip in for a layup. Mary Kate King's drive to the basket at 5 minutes and 37 seconds of the first quarter kept the Eagles ahead, 66-4. Glenwood used some hot shooting to regain the lead as it went on a 14-7 run to close the first, but Anna Chandley's baseline jumper as time expired kept Wallert within striking distance, trailing 18-13 after 8 minutes. Quote, our girls were ready, Spiegler said. They were pumped and fired up and put a lot of heart and effort into this all season, so we knew we'd be ready to go. Glenwood just shot really well. Our kids are fearless, though, and they didn't back down. Unquote. Chandley connected to a three-pointer early in the season to keep Wallert within five at 21-16. While the Eagles could never quite close the gap, their tenacity and grit did not allow Glenwood to pull away either. Allie Kutch's tray with 2 minutes and 11 seconds remaining in the quarter again closed the deficit to five, but the Rams' offensive prowess used an 8-2 run to close the half and take a 40-29 advantage at the break. Wallert's hard-nosed style paid off as it coaxed three Glenwood starters into foul trouble in the first half, but the Rams simply shot lights out from the field, connecting on 67% of their first half attempts. King's drive to the hoop cut the deficit to 8 with 3 minutes and 52 seconds left in the third quarter and ignited the Eagles' faithful. The Rams responded quickly, however, using another big 10-1 scoring run to extend the lead to 17 heading into the final quarter. Quote, we tried different defenses. We tried everything, Spiegler said. It just seemed like they were getting every loose ball at that point and then kick it out. When you shoot like they did, it's tough. Unquote. Wallert just could not overcome Glenwood's offensive firepower as the Rams connected on 62% of their shots from the field, including 5 of 12 from their three-point range. In their final game, in an Eagles uniform, influential seniors King, Kutch, and Chandley led Wallert in scoring. Chandley had 17 points while King added 15 and Kutch finished with 9. Quote, the difference today was our shots didn't fall, King said. It happens to everyone, and unfortunately, tonight, it happened to us. Regardless of the outcome, Chandley could not be any more proud of this group and the bond they formed throughout this journey. Quote, I'm just really proud of my teammates. Everybody worked so hard to get here, she said. I think we had such a good bond this year. It's been one of the best experiences of my life, and I'm just so proud of the work we put in to make it here. Unquote. Kutch added, The whole experience and the whole season was just great. I had the best teammates and the best coaches ever. I'm just super grateful. And now we turn to the Tri-State page. Council delays considering source of income ordinance. Dubuque officials cite legislative action as the reason for their delay, by John Cruz. A divided Dubuque City Council this week postponed considering an ordinance that would prohibit landlords from rejecting tenants who receive public assistance. In a 6-1 vote, council members approved delaying the consideration of a source of income ordinance until after a bill passed by the Iowa Senate is voted on by the House of Representatives. If approved, this legislation would prohibit such an ordinance. Quote, I don't know that now is the time to make a decision one way or the other, said Mayor Roy Boole. We need to see what the legislature is going to do. Unquote. Councilmember Brad Kavanaugh cast the dissenting vote. Quote, landlords have had the opportunity to increase access and they haven't done it, he said. We need to get serious about housing. Unquote. In 2018, council members declined to adopt such an ordinance, instead having the city's housing department utilize incentives and educational programming to encourage more landlords to accept housing vouchers. However, data gathered from rental license holders in 2020 found that 31.9% of all rental units in the city accepted housing vouchers. A source of income ordinance recently was recommended again to council members by the city's housing commission. Commission members cited that a high number of Dubuque landlords continue to reject tenants who receive aid from government programs, particularly the Housing Choice Voucher Program, which provides federal funds that help low-income people pay for housing costs. The Federal Fair Housing Act prohibits rental discrimination. However, being low-income is not a protected class. This week, several council members expressed apprehension over passing such an ordinance due to Senate File 252, which would effectively prohibit municipalities from enacting any form of source of income ordinance. The Iowa Senate approved the measure in mid-February, but it has not been voted on by the House of Representatives. City Council member David Resnick also argued against the adoption of a source of income ordinance because landlords should be able to choose which housing programs they participate in. Quote, there are many well-run housing assistance programs, but not all, unquote, said Resnick. City staff did not make a recommendation on the issue in advance of this council meeting, citing the pending action in the legislature. During the meeting, City Housing and Community Development Director Alexis Stegner said the creation of the ordinance would require significant staff resources, as would its repeal if the state legislation passes. Councilmember Rick Jones said the state legislation would violate the city's right to self-governance. Quote, slowly but surely, the state legislature has preempted this and preempted that from the city government control, he said. For the most part, those people aren't here running these cities, unquote. He suggested the ordinance should be enacted with the stipulation that it go into effect July 1, the start date included in the bill approved by the Senate. If the state legislation is passed, Jones said the source of income ordinance then would never go into effect. Quote, we need to see what the legislature is going to do, unquote. And finally, three teens arrested after shooting in Dubuque hits residents. Police arrested three teens after a shooting Monday night in Dubuque. Charles D. Tyler, 18, no permanent address, was arrested at 12:45 a.m. Tuesday in the area of 14th Street and Central Avenue on a felony charge of aiding and abetting, going armed with an intent, according to Dubuque police. Court documents state that two other teenagers, ages 17 and 16, also were arrested after the shooting. Police have not released their names since they are being charged as minors. A press release states that the 17-year-old was charged with going armed with intent and interference with official acts, and the 16-year-old was charged with aiding and abetting, going armed with intent and interference with official acts causing injury. The 17-year-old and 16-year-old were transported to juvenile detention. Tyler was taken to Dubuque County Jail. Police responded to a report of a shooting at about 8:45 p.m. Monday in the area of Oak and Burn Streets. Shelby M. Strong, 35, of 65 Burn Street, told officers that the three teenagers shot at her residence, court documents state. Strong reported that she knew the three by name because they were acquaintances of her children. Strong identified the 17-year-old as the person who fired the gun at her residence. Officers located three shell casings in the area and saw two suspected bullet impacts on the south side of Strong's residence. Traffic camera footage showed a vehicle possibly connected to the shooting. Police tracked the vehicle to the 1400 block of Central Avenue, where they pulled it over and arrested Tyler. The other two teens fled on foot. The 16-year-old was apprehended in the area of 15th Street and Central Avenue. Officer Dylan Durgis, quote, sustained injuries to his knees, elbows, and hand while arresting the teen, documents state. The 17-year-old was found hiding in the 1400 block of Locust Street. Officers with a search warrant located a handgun in the vehicle that had been tracked to the area. Tyler was interviewed, and he identified the 17-year-old as the individual who fired at the residence, documents state. And that does it for today's reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Wednesday, March 3rd, 2021. I'm your reader, Catherine Moyers. You can access a recording of today's reading at our website, iowaradioreading.org, anytime. Thank you for listening.